Hi, everybody, and welcome to The Guiding Light. If you were here last week, I hope you enjoyed the recording, which, of course, was part of that video with Bernadette Roberts speaking. And tonight, what I'm going to do is I'm going to return to what is self, and I am beginning at the bottom of page 24 for anybody who likes to read along. No, I turned all my lights on. It's just dark in here. Did I turn this one all the way? Okay, well, that it is what it is. All right, so I'm going to begin reading now. If I had to put my finger, of course, this is Bernadette Roberts speaking, right? If I had to put my finger on the major change of consciousness or what actually happens with the falling away of the ego, I would pinpoint the feeling self, specifically self-will or the experience of self-being. Following the divine breakthrough, the specific energy or power that is self-will does not work anymore. At first, this predicament is reminiscent of St. Paul's complaining about doing the things he did not wish to do and not doing the things he wished to do. It is as if our self-will had been immobilized and all our efforts come to naught. The inability to help ourselves or the sense of our own helplessness is quite overwhelming. But what really has happened here? Obviously, the particular energy of self-will, that which craves, clings, grasps, and becomes attached, has disappeared. Although the breakthrough of the divine into the unconscious releases great psychological energy, this energy is not ours to get hold of. If anything, it is ours to be wary of. What we have to seek is a center of no energy, a center of calm, stillness, and peace. We must submit all experiential energies to this interior silence and emptiness. The true drama of the falling away of the ego is centered in the will, energy, or feeling self. I'll just pause for a moment before we go on to the next paragraph. Probably most of us do not realize how much our identification of I or me is actually attached to wants, which would include anti-wants, like I want and I don't want. The way we think things should be, for example. I think that most of us put a lot more energy into trying to make things go the way we think they should or go the way we want them to go than we realize. So just imagine for a moment that that ability completely falls away. That whatever was in you that you use to strive for the college degree, strive for the relationship, strive to keep the relationship, strive for the financial security, even strive for awakening. Imagine that that's just gone. I've heard a lot of people describe this in a negative sense, because all of their movement in life was driven by this self-will. And they were so attached to this driving force that when it fell away, what they experienced was what they described as a lack of motivation. But listen to what she says, okay? Keep that image in mind that, you know, the driving force, what's always kept you moving forward towards what you wanted, even awakening, right? What always has kept you moving forward, that energy that kept you moving forward has now fallen away. It's gone. It doesn't exist. And maybe the thought enters the mind again that you're experiencing a total lack of motivation. And maybe you're even, you know, lack of motivation is even feeling like unmotivated, like there's something lacking in it, right? Now listen to what she says. What we have to seek is a center of no energy, a center of calm, stillness, and peace. We must submit all experiential energies to this entire interior silence and emptiness. So again, this is just a massive shift. It's a big change compared to what you're used to. You're used to this driving force, which really was a type of will, a personal self-will that motivated you to everything that you did, motivated you to eat, motivated you to diet, motivated you to exercise, motivated you to, you know, take care of your children in a certain way, you know, just everything you were motivated to, this driving force motivated you to do it. And now it's gone. She's describing this now as the next challenge. The next challenge is to seek, she says, seek, instead of seeking that driving force, to seek that center of no energy, which is absolute stillness, absolute peace, and learning to abide there. Now, what does this mean? Does this mean that the body never moves again? I mean, before, every time the body moved, it's because it was being motivated by self-will, and now there is no self-will. It was motivated by an energy that you could even feel, even though you may not have been aware of it. You could feel the motivation. You had a name for it, right? Motivation. You were motivated to get that college degree, right? You were motivated to do your gentle healing homework, right? And now it's gone. And she says what you need to seek in the place of this energy is the no energy. The stillness, the peace. You know, we've all heard Eckhart Tolle's story about how when he first awakened, and of course his motivation fell away, and he was a college professor, right? So he was probably a pretty motivated guy. And when his ego fell away, he sat on a park bench for 2 years. Do you remember that? We know that Ramana Maharshi sat in a cave for, I don't remember the exact number of years. It was teens, you know, in the teens, you know, 13, 17, who knows, but in the teens. And in fact, what Eckhart Tolle was doing on that park bench and what Ramana Maharshi was doing in that cave is what she's recommending that we do when that self-will falls away, to seek that point of no energy, where the energy used to be, where the motivation used to come from. Go into that no energy, that stillness, that peace, and learn to abide there. And I can see how this teaching is very, very helpful because, again, I have heard people, you know, whether they're talking to Adya Shanti or someone else, I've heard people raise their hand and ask this question and describe how this motivation has fallen away, and now they feel lost. Well, it's because they didn't know, once the motivation fell away, they didn't know what their next goal was, one that they obviously aren't feeling motivated towards. But their next goal is just to find that emptiness, that center where the motivation used to be. And now there's nothing there, and abide there. And again, I started to ask the question a while ago, does that mean the body never moves again? Well, Eckhart Tolle's body didn't move hardly at all for 2 years, but then something moved it. Ramana Maharshi's body didn't move for teens of years, you know, 13, 17, something like that. But then somebody asked him a question, and he came out of his silence and began teaching. But because the self-will was dead, because that previous motivating force was dead, when their bodies did begin to move, it wasn't being moved because they hadn't found the motivation. It was just being moved. They learned to abide in the stillness and the emptiness, and yet the body moved. Do you see the difference? She says, it is not without insight or experience that the Christian tradition holds that union with the divine is a union or conformity of wills, self-will with divine will, that the energy, power, or will that is consciousness is united to the power or will of the divine. It's quite true. By reason of this divine power, we are created, held in existence, and ultimately returned to the divine. The falling away of the ego is a major step in the return journey. From now on, self or consciousness can never move against the divine or go against the proper direction of the journey. So it is true to say that in the unitive state, we have no will of our own. That is, no will separate from the divine, or no self-will that can go against the divine. Now, this is extremely offensive to the ego. I remember when I first started studying the course, somewhere I got this idea of no will, no self-will as being a part of awakening. Somewhere I got that out of the course. And I experienced that as offensive at that point because the ego was so strong. To have no choice anymore. But this is what we are being told, whether we find it offensive or blissful, I suppose, is just a matter of how attached we are to the ego at this point, right? But this is what we are being told, is that once the ego falls away, there is no more self-will. I am a completely submitted slave. I'm going to use the word slave here because even a servant has a choice. A slave has no choice. I'm a completely submitted slave to the divine, but without resistance. Because there's not even enough will, personal self-will, for me to resist that slavery. At this point, it's almost like before I started this path, I was walking around a paved square, walking in all different directions. And then I found the sidewalk. And the sidewalk was a spiritual path. And so then I started my own will, right, walking up that sidewalk. But once the ego falls away, I step onto a moving sidewalk. And now I'm just being carried the rest of the way, without any ability to resist. Peace Pilgrim described it this way. She said that what happened, she called it reaching her mountaintop experience. That's what she called the falling away of the ego, reaching her mountaintop experience. And she said that when she reached the mountaintop, it wasn't that the learning had stopped. It's just that all struggle with the ego had stopped, right? And the struggle with the ego would be, you know, trying to overcome the ego's resistance to the awakening process. You can never move against the divine or go against the proper direction of the journey. Imagine that. Whatever direction you need to go in to awaken, you are going to go in, and you can't move against it. So what does this mean? Well, it could mean any number of things. It could mean that if your spouse is just sick and tired of this spiritual path that you're on and not at all interested in the way you are since this ego has fallen away, that your spouse decides to divorce you and there's not a thing you do to stop it, because that's the direction you need to move in, right? It could just mean anything. You no longer have the will that's going to try and talk your partner into staying. You just let the divorce happen, because this divorce is a part of what needs to happen, and you have no will to struggle against what needs to happen. Now, what's interesting about that is prior to the falling away of the ego, the same thing could happen. We could have a partner who decides they no longer want to be with us because of the way we've changed since we've been on the spiritual path, and they could start the divorce proceedings, but mentally we're struggling against it. We're talking to them, trying to get them to change their mind, and there may still be not a thing we can do to stop it because this is what needed to happen. But we suffer through the entire divorce process because we think we want something different. So really, the only change is peacefully allowing things to unfold in the way they need to unfold in order for awakening to complete itself. All right, you just become the eyes that watches the partner pack his or her bags, leave, signs the divorce papers. No more trying to make something happen differently than the way it's going to happen anyway. So it is true to say that in the unitive state, we have no will of our own. That is, no will separate from the divine, or no self-will that can go against the divine. As the journey moves forward, we will see again and again how this works. It will strike us as marvelous. This union of wills, however, was not brought about by our own doing. It occurred because the divine broke into the unconscious to dissolve a specific energy, the energy of self-will, or that which could go contrary to the divine, the ego. Once again, the ego center does not fall away because it is false or bad. Rather, it attaches itself to the divine and gives its all until there is no more to give. Now, that's an interesting perspective. It's a different perspective than we hear from some of the other teachers we listen to. And I'm completely open to that, you know. She's saying the ego ends when, in a way, it's kind of fulfilled its journey. Whatever that journey was, you know, and the way that I kind of imagine it is, you know, imagine again, you're going to have to personify consciousness in order to follow this story. And so this is just a symbol. But imagine consciousness has this idea that it wants to have all of these different experiences, as many experiences as it can, and it automatically creates multiple personalities. You know, you have the minister and the murderer and the hooker and the policeman and the chronically ill person and the doctors and the nurses and the teachers and the students and the government people and the people in the other party and the other countries that are enemies and the other countries that are allies, and you're just, everything kind of is created. So there can just be all of these experiences. And somewhere in consciousness, there's this idea of the experiences it wants to have through each of these characters that have been created. And one of these characters is you, what you think of as you. And so consciousness has in mind a type of experience it wants to have through you. You know, we could call that your purpose, except it's not really what people often imagine as their purpose. People often imagine their purpose to be really, really helpful things. You know, maybe your purpose is to one day in your car have an accident and kill a young child and suffer over that. Maybe that's the experience, right? So purpose is not necessarily the way people imagine it, but you could say each character has a purpose to bring forth a certain experience. And when that purpose is complete, when there's nothing else that consciousness deemed it wanted to have through that aspect of ego, then ego can end. Now, I'm kind of making this up as I go, but it explains a lot. Like, you hear about these people who have these spontaneous awakenings, right? Like that one lady, I can't think of her name, who stepped on a bus, and as she stepped on the bus, her ego fell away and she awakened. You know, Byron Katie, a roach crawls over her foot and she awakens. And then there's people who's on the spiritual path for years and years and years, and then they awaken. Ramana Maharshi was just a kid. He awakened. And, you know, we often want to know, how can all of these awakenings, these different awakenings occur? Well, what if that was just the conclusion of that aspect's purpose, that character's purpose? And you may say, well, then why do I have to be on the spiritual path if I can, you know, awaken by stepping on a bus? Well, the experience of the spiritual path might just be another experience that consciousness wanted to have. Did you think of that? You know, maybe it doesn't just want to murder people. Maybe it wants to have an awakening experience on a spiritual path too. Right? Every experience it could possibly have. And so this is, you know, she says it's not false. Well, the way other people describe the ego as false, that would still be false. You know, she, I don't know what she means by the word false, what it means to her. But the character that's created for a specific purpose is not who you really are. Therefore, it's false, because you really are the consciousness that created all of the characters, right? But what an interesting concept that when your character's purpose is complete, awakening will happen. I mean, if you accept that, you can actually just relax while you go right on doing everything you're doing. Whether it's being, you know, in your humble opinion, an excellent spiritual student, or in your humble opinion, a very poor, not very well dedicated spiritual student. ultimately, it doesn't matter. Because it's still an experience that consciousness wants to have through you. Do you hear the peace in that? Oh, and Don says, what if this is what Rebecca was talking about when she said we still need the ego? Oh, sorry, that was private. Well, I'll go ahead and answer that. there's a difference between, at least in my humble opinion, between saying we need the ego and the ego will conclude when it's done. When I say I need something, there's something in me that's going to try and cling to it. And what I'm saying now is more something that kind of communicates to my mind, let everything be as it is, it's all perfect. It's a slightly different communication, at least in my mind. It puts me at ease. If I say I need the ego, and this is just for me, if I say I need the ego, then there's something in me that's going to be struggling against any practice or any teaching that's talking about letting go of the ego. I'll have something to fight against. Where this is giving me nothing to fight against. And again, it doesn't matter whether I'm a good spiritual student or a poor spiritual student, in my own humble opinion, right? It's really accepting whatever this character is exactly as it is and knowing that's perfect. And that puts me at ease. And that's why also I think there's some truth here. You know, a long time ago, one of the things that I learned on the spiritual path from within was that truth causes a relaxation, a sense of freedom, a peace, an at-easeness, right? And non-truth creates a tightening, a constriction, a fear, right? So if the idea that there's a purpose here of some type of experience through me that I don't know anything about, right? Therefore, I can't define whether I'm doing it good or bad. I don't even know what it is. But when it's complete, this ego will just end. That puts me at ease with me. That puts me at ease with me on the days that I meditate for 2 hours. And it also puts me at ease with me on the days that I don't get to meditate at all, that I just don't. I can always be at ease with me because somewhere inside what I'm hearing is this is perfect. It's always perfect. It can't be anything but perfect. Now, some people might ask, what does that mean then that I just let my ego run rampant and I scream at people all the time? Well, to be honest, if that's the way I was to be, that's the way I'd be. But guess what? I'm not, so it must not be the way I'm to be. Do you hear that? The experience that consciousness must want to have through me is an experience of being able to watch the mind, being able to discern between thoughts, being able to decide which thoughts to follow, which thoughts not to follow, and being able to teach that to others. That must be the experience consciousness wants through me, because guess what? That's what's here. But it doesn't mean that everybody else who maybe doesn't have this experience is wrong, because they're being whatever they need to be for consciousness to have the experience it wants to have through them. Doesn't that make you feel at ease? Right? It's like you can't be wrong. You can't be wrong. And that's the opposite of what the ego says about you. The ego says you're pretty much always wrong. All right, well, it looks like I'm out of time, so I'm going to stop there. I have to go shopping for my mom and buy her some new appliances while they're on sale, so I'll be leaving soon. I'll see you guys. Bye.